Every year is a good year for jazz. Whether it's the Duke or Ella or someone newer to the scene, you'll find all your jazz favorites on A Good Year for Jazz with your host, Nathan. Each week, travel the calendar back to 1945, 59, or even 2015 to hear what was happening in the world of jazz. I'll meet you right here Monday night, 7 to 9, on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. And now we've got an interview with Reed McDonald of Odd Man Rush Brewing in Eagle River. Reed, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you doing?
Excellent. Excellent. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me on. I appreciate that.
So, hey, I see looking on the internet, you guys have got a big expansion underway up there. So why don't you tell folks about that for starters?
Yeah, well, it's been a long time coming. We have kind of been growing slowly, and that was on purpose. We didn't want to kind of get ahead of ourselves. And we're trying to do things out of pocket at this point. So yeah, we're doubling our square footage and our right adjacent to our current spot there. And it's going to be a little more tap room, but mostly just beer manufacturing, just more space for fermenters and a canning line, hopefully down the line here. So yeah, just more bigger cold room, that type of thing. So we're pretty excited.
So what size system are you operating right now?
Right now we've got a 10 barrel brew house and we have three 20 barrel fermenters with one 20 barrel bright tank. And in the expansion, we are adding three 30 barrel fermenters and a 30 barrel bright tank.
Okay. So you'll be able to triple batch instead of just double batch.
Exactly. And what we've run into is even as small as we are, you know, getting different styles of beer in our lineup has been a tremendous effort to get them in there, just because even us, as small as we are, we have our, you know, you have to have our Enforcer IPA, we have to have our half on tap. So all these things kind of take precedent. You kind of get driven into that production schedule, unfortunately. So with the expansion, we're hoping to not only satisfy that demand, but also get our kind of beer out, because our tap room, you know, takes up 95% of our beer. We have not been able to have the ability to push beer out the door as much as we'd like. So this will help in many different facets, if you will.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, if you had been distributing any of your beer or sending it anywhere off-site. Sounds like not much at all, huh?
You know, we've got a few select accounts. We sell our beer to Pizza Man, which is a legendary establishment in Eagle River. We sell our beer to a couple places in Anchorage, and so that, you know, there's about three or four or five, I think, that we actually sell to, so we've been pretty careful in that regard. We don't want to, again, put ourselves out there and then not be able to produce what we said we could. And then, you know, it doesn't make sense. The old wholesale versus retail thing, we can't really run out in our tap room. So this will help big time.
Now you're making a lot better margin on that retail beer than you are in wholesale. I know that.
Exactly.
So some of our listeners down here on the peninsula may not have had an opportunity to try any of your beers. Why don't you tell them about some of your, you know, flagship brews, the ones that you typically have on tap, or any that you're particularly proud of?
Yeah, I mean, our start with our flagship beers. I would say our Enforcer IPA is a real solid hoppy West Coast IPA. We do that when we have a blonde, which is it's a typical American blonde. It's nice to have that one to kind of introduce people to craft beer, I guess. And there's we sell a boatload of that stuff out of the tap room. Another one would be our Hefeweizen. I think we have a real strong Hefeweizen. It's a Bavarian style Hefeweizen, so you get a lot of those banana and clovey flavors. We'll let the yeast do the work on that one. And then our vanilla porter has been another one that's been real well received. And with all our beers, we don't do any extracts. We try and use like real vanilla beans. So when vanilla shot up to, I think it shot up 400% there. They had a bad year in Madagascar, and we sucked it up and kept buying it and producing it the way we wanted. We didn't do the old extract route. So yeah, as far as that, like I said, we've been experimenting lately. We did a white stout with our collaboration with our friends over there at Son of the North. They're a clothing company. Brock Lindau, lead singer from 36 Crazy Fist, kind of a spinoff of that. And that's been huge. In fact, I just went down the brewery here a couple hours ago and looked at our stock, and we sold a lot of that this week. And so it's only been out for less than a week, and it's we may have to throw that in the rotation again. So yeah, that's about it. I think we do a good job of doing beers that are true to style. And then, like I said, we're just starting to kind of get out there and have the ability to do some crazy stuff. So it's going to be fun.
So what's your guys' background? Were you home brewers? How did you come into becoming a commercial brewery?
Yeah, the old homebrew action. We started home brewing in my garage, and it was Ross Johnson and I, my other partner, Ross Johnson and Brian Swanson, my other partner, three of us. So Brian's my brother-in-law, so he had started kind of brewing on his own. He had kind of planted the seed with myself, and so Ross and I got together and started doing it. And at that time, Swanee, as we call him, Brian Swanson, he was playing professional hockey in Germany. So he went to Germany. By the time he got back that one year, we had gone from, like, you know, doing the extract at all grain, and we were building our own stuff. And I was just hook, line, and sinker. That's all I could think about. So yeah, then we all started three brewing together, and it just kind of developed from there. So
cool. So you kind of mentioned it a little bit before. Do you guys have a brewing philosophy? Anything that you're really trying to convey with your beer?
You know, I think we brew beer that we like to drink, I guess, is the number one. And like I said, I'd like to be, in some regards, true to style. And then the other part is we like to play around like every home brewer does. And that's kind of what's been kind of lacking in our brewery lately, is just, again, being driven by the production schedule and having to have every third batch of beer be an IPA. And so, again, it'll be a lot more enjoyable for us as brewers to get this expansion going in that regard.
So what's your timeline on that expansion? When do you figure to have it finished?
I think it took us a while for the permitting. I know that we were really set back by the state fire marshal's office. They had a bunch of cuts in their office. So instead of being a 2-week turnaround, that was more like a 3-month ordeal. So, but right now we're rolling, and we're hoping to be here in about 2 months, be producing beer in there, because we do have a double rent payment coming here pretty quick. So, and then as far as the tap room portion of that, we're probably going to build again. We're trying to do it out of pocket. So that won't be available right away, but hopefully this summer sometime we'll be able to open that up and have people enjoy that part of it too.
I heard you say you have some thoughts on a canning line. What size canning line are you planning to go with?
We don't know. We're still kind of researching it, and still it's a money issue. So our goal is to get our equipment, which we've already purchased, up and running, and then be able to pump out some beer, get it out to different areas of the state, including Kenai. And then I'm not sure what the timeline is, but down the line, we want to get the canning would be the next big expenditure, and then go down that road. I think that's kind of the way of the future. And, you know, going out to different breweries, which I always do, not only in Alaska, but, you know, down the states, it just seems like camped out at a couple of breweries down in Chicago, and I just sat outside and watched, and the number of people that leave with cans nowadays, it was like 75%, I calculated, one brewery, we're leaving with cans. So I think kind of that's the way of the future. The growlers are kind of going to the wayside here, and people are really enjoying the cans. So
you guys are you're already selling in crowlers, right?
Yeah, we got the crowlers, which is great. I mean, it's been a great tool for a small brewery like us to not have to invest in a canning line, and people can take the beer, you know, either back home if they're from out of state, or out on the Alaskan adventure. I mean, it's just a little better size. I mean, when you open up a growler, sometimes it's, if you're going to commit yourself to a whole one by yourself, maybe not. But, you know, the growler, the size of it, 32 ounces, is a little more palatable, I think.
Well, hey, Reed, I know I'd be remiss if I didn't offer my condolences for your loss of Jacob. I saw on online where you guys had lost your brew buddy. So I'm really sorry to hear that.
Yeah, thanks, man. I was using him kind of as Jacob the brew dog there, and it was kind of a funny little thing we were doing for mostly for social media. But yeah, he got hit by a car. We had just rescued him here. I think he was only with us in 19 months, but as everyone knows, his dogs and family pets will get into your life, and then you know, it's kind of tough to see him go, especially get hit by a car. But I appreciate that.
All right, well, hey, have you got any events or anything coming up here in the near future that you want to tell our listeners about?
and nothing other than expansion. We're kind of all on expansion mode, and we've done that kind of by ourselves. So we've been throwing on the old tool bags and swinging the hammer. So we're going to continue to do so until we're done. So other than that, we'll be hopefully at all the festivals here coming. I know there's a lot in the summer, and we're going to try and be at every one, and again, try and get our beer out there. And hopefully we'll get it back down to Kenai. My boy plays the Kenai Brown Bears, so I was down there every so often watching him play. So,
well, hopefully you can make it down in August for our big August beer festival that we have down here. Love to see your stuff be on offer.
Yeah, we were down there last year. We sent Kenny, or one of our employees down there, Kenny Hood, and yeah, we'll definitely be back.
Well, hey, Reed, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. Really do appreciate it, and good luck with the expansion. Look forward to seeing the finished product.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
All right. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. We'll be right back with our next segment.
Are you guys ready for a little bit of rest?
Relaxation?
And Ruri.
No, you're supposed to say radio.
Radio.
Because we have a radio station. It's Rest, Relaxation, and Radio.
Radio.
7 to 9 on Thursdays. KDLL 91.9.
Guys, that's it.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. In our next segment, we're going to talk about a Super Bowl ad. While America may be in the process of fragmenting and balkanizing into various hostile tribal groups, there's still one event that we all more or less gather to experience together, the Super Bowl. And while there's no guarantee that the game itself will be any good, this year certainly wasn't great, but it was better than some past contests, at least we can all look forward to the commercials. Anheuser-Busch's commercials for Budweiser and Bud Light have long been a fixture of Super Bowl advertising, usually featuring heartwarming or funny animals, but let's not forget the one dissing craft beer drinkers a few years ago, just as AB InBev was busy buying up craft breweries like Elysian. However, this year's Bud Light commercial targeting Miller and Coors raised more than a few eyebrows and generated quite a bit of pushback. In case you didn't watch the Super Bowl or have forgotten, the ad showed a large barrel of corn syrup being delivered by mistake to the Bud Light castle. In a quest to get the corn syrup to its intended recipients, the king of Bud Light and a group of followers travel long distances to deliver the barrel to Miller Lite and Coors Light, since both companies brew beer using corn syrup. The ad quickly drew criticism from corn farmers and others in the domestic beer industry. The National Corn Growers Association said it was disappointed in Bud Light. Miller Lite thanked Bud Light for, quote, including us in our first Super Bowl ad in over 20 years, and pointed out it has more taste and half the carbs. Bud Light's advertising tactic appears to be playing on a public perception that corn syrup is unhealthy by implying that it has been added to other beers as a sweetener. But the inclusion of corn syrup in beer does not make a difference in nutrition or taste. While it sounds like high fructose corn syrup, a sweetener commonly added to sodas and flavored beverages, corn syrup itself is a clear sweet liquid derived from cornstarch that contains glucose. Added to the beer brewing process, the corn syrup is eaten by yeast, turning the sugars into alcohol. So from a brewer's perspective, corn syrup represents a cheap and convenient way to add highly fermentable sugars, which will boost the alcohol content without increasing the body or mouthfeel of the beer. Such adjuncts are typically referred to as lighteners in the trade, as they help lighten the final product. While well-known domestic lagers like Coors Light and Miller Lite do include corn syrup in their brewing process, the ingredient is not added to sweeten, but so the sugars will ferment and transform into alcohol, giving the brews their signature light body and crisp taste. Further, because the sugars from the corn syrup are fermented out during the beer brewing process, no one is drinking straight sugar from a bottle of beer, unless otherwise added. Bud Light also adds sugars into its fermentation process, but instead of relying on corn syrup, Bud Light uses rice as its source of a fermentable sugar during its brewing process. According to a list of ingredients used in Bud Light, the drink includes water, barley, rice, and hops. The company uses corn syrup and some of its other products, such as Busch Light and Natural Light. In fact, Anheuser-Busch bought more than 1 billion pounds of corn ingredients in 2018, according to the company's spokesperson. From a scientific perspective, the difference between using the corn syrup used by Miller Coors and the rice syrup used by Anheuser-Busch is negligible. Both are simply a means to add simple sugar to the brew, and both are almost completely fermented out. So if this is a meaningless difference, what is AB InBev's real strategy here? It's surprising that Bud Light mentioned its smaller competitors by name at all. Bud Light is bigger than Miller Lite and Coors combined. It has a 51.1% share of American light beers, according to Nielsen, versus Miller Lite's 21% and Coors's 23.9%. Referring by name to a smaller competitor goes against conventional advertising wisdom. Bud Light occupies space in a declining segment tarnished by what many consumers see as a tired category of cheaply made industrial swill. This is not the case with all pale lagers. Mexican lagers have shown great market strength despite being effectively indistinguishable from American light lagers. The Bud Light message, then, tries to seize on that tarnished image to claim some arguable high ground. Sure, most light lagers are industrial swill made with cheap ingredients, but not ours. Or, more accurately, ours is made with a different added lightener. In marketing theory, it's generally a bad idea to try to drag a category down to elevate one player. And that's especially true since the problem with Bud Light is structural. The entire domestic light lager category is in freefall. Pointing out a category's less savory features is not a productive long-term strategy for the leading brand in that category. But even putting that aside, there's an even bigger problem. Remember that 1 billion pounds of corn ingredients that AB InBev uses each year? They go into many beers besides its cheapest light lagers. For example, Stella Artois, an AB InBev beer in the so-called premium lager category, lists corn as one of its ingredients. AB InBev even uses actual high fructose corn syrup, different from plain corn syrup and of a much greater health concern, in some of its beverages, such as hard soda and iced tea products. All this begs the question, does AB InBev really want to be calling attention to the use of adjuncts? Isn't this strategy likely to boomerang back on its overall sales? And make no mistake, big beer is in serious trouble and they know it. In 2017, the most recent year for which statistics are available, craft beer grew by 5% in output, while the total beer market shrank by 1%. So if craft beer is growing and the total market is shrinking, where are the losses? Yes, you guessed it, domestic beers produced by AB InBev, Miller & Coors. Since 2017, more than 9% of the market volume has shifted from large brewers and importers to smaller brewers and importers. Believe me, AB InBev is painfully aware of the statistics I just reported. That's why its choice of strategy in the Super Bowl ad is so odd. The entire light beer category is a more or less inevitable demographic collapse, as the dedicated Bud Light drinkers of older generations die or age out of the market. The younger drinkers entering the market have grown up in a world of choice and are much more eclectic in their drinking tastes. They are much less likely to choose a light American lager, and if they do, are much more likely to pick something from their local craft brewery. By giving them just another reason to do so, AB InBev's anti-corn syrup rant seems to be helping to cut its own throat. However, if like me, you're a lover of craft beer, it's a bit too early to dance on AB InBev, Miller, and Coors' collective grave. They are huge companies with enormous resources, both financial and political, and they will not hesitate to use them to gain advantage. We, the beer consumers, must stay alert to make sure they do not engage in any shady or deceptive tactics against the small and independent breweries out there. When we see such things happen, we must recognize it and call it out for what it is. In this case, AB InBev went after its big rivals, who are more than capable of pushing back in the media and the marketplace. But when it decides to use the same tactics against a smaller competitor, who's going to be there to defend the little guy? Coming up next, we'll have our final segment, an interview with Baleen Brewing of Ketchikan. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna.
KDLL Public Radio provides the news, interviews, features, and entertainment programming you trust from around the world and right here at home. Do you value local, responsible reporting or diverse music brought to you by your friends and neighbors? How about in-depth shows that are unique to your community? Then please support KDLL. We can't continue to bring you the local programming you enjoy without your support. Please visit kdll.org and click the donate button today.
Hello and welcome back to our last segment here on Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. Now we're interviewing Alex McGillivray of Baleen Brewing Company in Ketchikan. Hey, Alex, how you doing today?
Greetings, Alaska. I'm just about perfect. Nice to be here.
Sounds good. So, hey, for our listeners who probably a lot of them haven't been to Ketchikan recently, why don't you tell them about Baleen Brewing Company?
Well, this is a project I've been working on since about 2007. I think, you know, like most professional brewers, we've all started out on the amateur level, learning our tricks and trades, you know, as we grow as brewers. And I'm no different than that. That's exactly what I did. I started brewing back in 1990. Take that back. And tacked my way through my career as a nurse with the end goal of being a brewer. And now, well, here I am making beer and happier than can be.
Took you a long while to get open because you basically built the brewery yourself, right?
Yeah, that's the truth. I am on the north end of Ketchikan, and you know, Ketchikan's kind of an old town, and not many of the buildings that are downtown are really have the structural integrity to support that kind of project. And the ones that do were a little bit priced out of my price range. So I looked at a friend of mine and said, well, let's build a brewery over here on my property. And he said, okay, let's do it. But while you're at it, we should probably put a vacation rental on top. And I said, okay, let's do that then. So we built the brewery. On the ground floor is the brewery itself. Above that is an inn, a nice vacation rental. So this summer, guests have already started booking with anticipations of having their very own private keg up in their own little tap room and the vacation rental side of things. So people are looking forward to that, and I haven't even had to market it. Word got out, and I'm fully booked.
So, sounds like I wish I had known about it. I might have booked one. Are you selling your beer strictly out of your tap room, or are you distributing any down into other accounts or anything?
I don't have a tap room yet. That's in the works for this, hopefully in July. My business partners have built a tourist attraction downtown that's fish-centric. In other words, you know, the tourists go in, they learn all about fish. It's a narrated interactive tour. At the end of that, samples of fish to eat. And hopefully, I hope by July, they'll also be able to have, flights of my beer available as well. And then I want to stay open all winter long and serve the locals here, you know, some fresh beer, because we don't get fresh beer down here unless we make it ourselves.
What size of your system and what's your brewing outfit look like?
Well, I got 2 7-barrel fermenters and a 7-barrel bright tank to do some aging of, you know, Saison style and old Brun Flanders red type beers that need to sit around for months to age. Right now, I've only got 2 beers out on the market. For St. Patrick's Day, I released a very elegant oatmeal milk stout I named Oblivion, and people gobbled that up. I was running right up there drinking wise with Guinness downtown, and that was a really good feeling to see people enjoying that beer. And the other one I have is an American Pale Ale that I've called No Agenda. And that one also is very popular downtown. And the kegs are moving quickly. So I'm almost at capacity now. You know, every time I turn around, it seems like I'm back in the brew house, making another batch of beer and getting it out the door to the bars downtown. And that's been a very rewarding experience for me, coming out of the box and doing it right from the very beginning and making the people here happy.
So if anybody's visiting Ketchikan and they want to taste your beers, they should check out the bars downtown?
Yeah, there's a few bars down there that have my product. The Asylum is right downtown, right by the tunnel, and Carlos has been a very good advocate for me and helped promote my product with newspaper and radio ads. And he also has the cheapest beer and the widest selection of beers in town. and well worth a visit there. And then there's another bar called Fat Stan's, a guy named Brad Stewart owns that place. He's got food there, you know, pizzas and so on. And product's been moving through there very quickly as well. And the Moose Lodge also has my product along with a few other bars. But those are the three main heavy hitters that are, you know, selling my product and turning it over very quickly. So I appreciate those three guys down there.
So looking longer term, are you going to follow the, for want of a better word, what I used to call it, the brewery as bakery model, like Ben Milstein over in Kodiak, who has no interest in sending his beer anywhere off of Kodiak? Is that your business model? You're thinking is you're gonna dominate, well, yeah, Ketchikan, and that's as far as you want to go?
No, I want to get my product out as well. My long-term goal was I wanted to get my practice dialed in and perfect here, and I gave myself a 2-year window, but my business partners have pushed me into moving downtown already. So probably by next year, I'll be expanding from the 7-barrel system I have now, and I'll explore the structure of the buildings that we're looking at. Maybe if I even a 15-barrel system downtown, I'll do that. Minimum of 10-barrel, but I'm hoping for 15-barrel brew house in the downtown area. And once that happens, yeah, I would love to get my product up north and be part of the you know, the beer festivals that are up in the interior that, you know, me way down here in Ketchikan, kind of hanging on by my fingernails, miss out a lot of.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, where you are, it's easier to send your beer to Seattle practically than it is to send it to anywhere in Alaska.
Yeah, well, yeah, but I want to keep things in Alaska, and I'm an Alaskan. Right. I don't live in Seattle.
Right.
So I want to stay up here where it's comfortable. Mm-hmm. You look at the map of Alaska, it's just a huge state. And, you know, I think, oh, yeah, I'll send beer to Anchorage until you really start looking at the logistics of it and thinking, oh, my gosh, how am I going to do that? But K&L and Odom, those are the two distributors that are here in town, and those are the ones that I've been courting. And as I move forward, they'll pick up my product and move it north and see how the people in the interior like it.
I know you're a huge admirer of Rodenbach and Flanders Reds.
Oh.
That's the direction you want to take your future brews?
Well, you know, I think we've all been in that predicament where, you know, we love these kind of beers like that, but you put them out to market and people kind of turn their nose up because they're not used to the aroma, they're not used to the funk, they're not used to the, Rodenbach kind of has a vinegary flavor to it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So that's a marketing hump that I've got to navigate. However, I think once people, you know, try that product, they'll be all about it. Now, you know, with the tourists, there's going to be 1.2 million tourists pulling up on the docks this year. And that's just from the cruise ships. That's not people flying up and taking the Alaska Marine Highway up. That's just strictly the cruise ships. So, and those people might have a little bit more educated palate. Maybe I'm being presumptuous when I say that, than the people here in Ketchikan who haven't really had a good soured beer before. So that may well be my market. But I think as people, they're experiencing these soured beers, warm up to it. For example, St. Patrick's Day with the Oblivion, the milk stuff that I made, I marketed putting a scoop of vanilla ice cream in there, the whipped cream, a cherry, and a mint leaf on top. And when I was pitching that to people, they looked at me like I was crazy. Well, you put ice cream in your beer? I'm like, well, yeah. Of course we put ice cream in beer, in a stout beer anyway. And once I bridged that gap, they were having a hard time keeping up with the ice cream downtown. You know, once people saw the floats moving away from the bar, people really enjoying them, I don't know what the sales numbers were, but I sure saw a lot of them moving around, and I know I had a couple. So it's just how you're going to market and put the spin on the products that to let people know that they should enjoy them and not think of something as a sour beer being so sour you can't drink it, like maybe lemonade, for example. So it's just how you're going to have to present your product to the population.
So looking long term, you say your plans are you're looking to in a year or two have a big brew house downtown. That's your long term direction?
I think the larger brew house, if things work out right, I'm maybe probably 18 months from now, I think I should be able to move downtown. There's a building that's down there now that's pretty rock solid. And I've been talking with the owner about leasing the ground floor space there. And it's got concrete dams, there's drains there. And the guy loves beer too. So I think him and I might be able to move forwards and, you know, put that together and online so I can expand quicker than I at first anticipated. But, you know, it'd be a good thing. We haven't had a brewery in Ketchikan for quite a long time.
Any thoughts in your packaging direction? I mean, long term, do you want a can? Do you want to stick with draft? What's your ideas?
Well, that's another stigma that you have to kind of get past. You know, I really wanted to put things in cans because, well, you know, the people that are going out fishing and stuff like that are out backpacking and hiking around here because it's a big, well, I think all of Alaska is pretty outdoorsy, but Ketchikan is too. And people are good stewards of the land here and they don't want to leave any traces behind. And crushing a can and packing it out in your backpack is a lot more reasonable than taking 22-ounce bottles or even 12-ounce bottles into the woods or out on the water and then bringing them back in. It's a lot easier to crush a can and pack it out in a bottle. So that's going to be my marketing spin for having a canning line. Now, will I have a bottling line? I don't know. Maybe. But if I do, it'll be a small one. But I'm going to try to drive towards cans over bottles at this point. But even getting a hold of cans, that I heard, from what I understand, that 19.2 ounce of the 500 ml cans, those are hard to come by now. I was talking to the representatives at Ball, and you know the larger breweries are buying those up by the millions of cans.
There's a big demand for them. Cans are the wave of the future.
Sure
I think.
I think so. You know, and that's a nice size serving. You know, 19.2 ounce versus, you know, 22 ounces, which maybe, you know, one person can't drink all that, especially if it's a highly alcoholic beer. But I may end up just going in the 12-ounce cans, which would be fine, too. They have more of them than the 19.2s, and that's okay. Not a problem.
Well, hey, Alex, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. I hope to get a chance to make it there in Ketchikan one of these years and check out your operation.
Well, come down, be a VIP. We'll open up the brewery, and we'll have a good time.
Sounds good. When you get enough beer piled up, come on up here to Kenai for our beer festival. We'll show you a good time.
Well, I'm sure you will. All right. Well, hey, thanks for the opportunity to talk and have a very good, well, it's spring break now down here. So have a great spring break and hopefully I'll talk to you again soon.
All righty. Take care. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDL 91.9 FM. And this concludes our show for this month. Join us again next month and we'll be talking beer. Till then, cheers.
Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier. Beers of Alaska, learn about them here.
IPAs, ales and stouts, pilsners, porters too. Microbrew.
Of Alaska, beer on the last frontier, beer.